Welcome back to Borderlines. That was the news headlines with Yvonne Ohaifo. You're still on Borderlines. So I have a special guest, I know we keep getting special guests on this show. This is the only show that takes you beyond borders. This time, we're going to Ghana. Well, I'm going to pretend we're going to Ghana. She's probably joining from another part, but she's our Ghanaian sister. And you know how you Nigerians are with Ghana. This one is not football, okay? This is our Ghanaian sister. Her name is Michelle Ajao Sahin. Michelle, did I pronounce the other name right? Oh, you're on mute. Yes, go on, say that again. We didn't hear you. No, you're fine. We didn't hear you. There's something wrong with the volume. There's something wrong with the volume. Is it from your end or from our end? We do not want this to happen. I know there's an underwater cable that's cut, that's affecting across Africa. Try again. Perhaps I can hear you. No, I can't hear you now. I can't hear you. I can see our technical guys. So your side is okay, right? I can see our technical guys trying to figure it out in the background. Okay, I can see the mouse going up and down. So whilst we're doing that, I'll take this opportunity to read that your profile. I wanted to take as much time with you, spend as much time with you as possible, but technology is forever stealing these things from me. So Lagos, Nigeria, wherever you're joining from, let me tell you about Michelle. Michelle, and this is how she puts it on her website. I'm going to read it verbatim. I went viral in 2018 inside a Philadelphia Starbucks when I was the only person to call out the racial discrimination and arrest of two black men for not buying a coffee. It was my speaking out against the injustice they faced and sharing my life's experience that led individuals and companies around the world to seek out my guidance on how to be more aware of their biases and use privilege for progress. Over the last several years, I've given dozens of keynote speeches, been on multiple news outlets, and coached thousands through my social media content creation. I continue my impact work by creating content for brands and my audience on Instagram and hosting a luxury wellness retreat for changemakers of color across Africa called Legacy House. I don't know if you can hear me, Michelle, but I know my boss is listening. So what I'm hoping she's going to do is to actually enroll me into that luxury that you're talking about. I know she's listening, so you better be enrolling me into that luxury life-changing retreat because I think I need it. You can see my voice, eh? All this work is not easy. Are we able to talk to Michelle now? Oh, dear. No? Nah. Okay, we're going to go on a quick break. Michelle, don't go away. We're going to go on a quick break for them to sort it out, and then we'll be right back. Hang on in there, Lagos. It's still Borderlines. We're not going anywhere.
Join the conversation and stay connected. 99.3 Nigeria Info. Instagram and YouTube. The conversation is just a click away. 99.3 Nigeria Info. Let's talk. Uplifting the nation through information.
Is it appropriate for a policeman to be searching through somebody's phone?
No, it is wrong.
The problem that the lecturers have against IPPIS is very simple. Our lecturers, they are teaching, not teaching in the University of Lagos alone. They are teaching in other universities, private, public, state, all kind of universities. Now, this IPPIS is caught off this madness. So that is what they are against. No, they feel like the federal government, the corrupt government. So let them be chopping their own at the federal level. Why the university will be chopping their own at the university level, academic level, and it can't continue like that.
Your reliable station for more information
this
around
is
Nigeria.
The Voice Note on 99.3 Nigeria Info. Let's talk.
Now, men and women are different. We have different hormones, we have different sexual organs, we have different biological abilities. Women can have babies, men can't. At least not yet. Men have testosterone and are, in general, physically stronger than women. But most of the positions of power and prestige are
above and beyond borders.
Beyond borders.
It's Borderline.
With Iriti Bakare Yusuf.
That's so strange.
Okay, welcome back, Lagos, Nigeria, wherever you're joining from. I think we've won the war over the gremlins. Michelle, can you hear me now?
I can hear you just fine.
Excellent. I can hear you now. Woof, woof. Fabulous. Thank you so much. Where are you joining us from, the US or Ghana?
I'm back in US. I just got back from Ghana a few weeks ago.
How is Ghana? Or how was Ghana?
Ghana is hot. It was beautiful. The mangoes were perfect. I miss home.
I can imagine.
Yes.
How's the politics out there? Because things are not so straightforward.
They're not so straightforward. In fact, the, one of the new policies that was just put in place would get me in prison for advocating for LGBTQ. So we have a long, long ways to go. And being there and speaking to more locals, you realize that people are struggling. And something has to change, or there will eventually be an uprising. You cannot continue to ignore your people for that long and expect people to not fight back.
Indeed. But it's so curious, though, because for a long time, Nigerians looked onto Ghana. Ghana was the place for Nigeria to be like. You know, Ghana was peaceful. Ghana was easy to live in. Ghana didn't have all these issues. The economy was stable. I mean, they did find oil, and people say when you find oil, that becomes the problem. But it was that country that was economically relatively stable. Things were not priced in dollars. Ghana was not connecting IMF loan. And now everything has changed.
Yeah, it's a shame. When I talk to people and you are hearing stories of men going out of their way to deliberately try and marry someone. They're using TikTok now, I found out, to try and find wives and partners outside of the country just to get out.
Wow.
They don't see a way to prosper in the country.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. Oh dear. Everywhere you look, there's something. The world, there's a shift going on, right? There's a paradigm shift going on.
Yeah. It's not just Ghana too. I mean, even in the U.S., people are rent poor. All their money is going to rent. Homelessness is on the rise. Now homelessness is being criminalized. So it's worldwide. Something is shifting. You're absolutely correct.
So, which brings me on to my first question. Let's talk about humanity. So, races and, you know, people from all over the world have stood up for Palestine. They continue to speak pro-Palestine. Talk to me about that tribe called humanity.
You know, the beautiful thing about what's happening in Palestine is people are understanding that we have a common goal. It doesn't matter if you're in India, if you're in Nigeria, if you're in America, if you're in Iceland, that the power is within the people. And, you know, we've never been more divided, and not just in our ideology, but physically, we've never been more divided. And with the influence, I believe the influence of the West and the influence of this ideology of individualism, it is separating us from being able to see how our struggles are connected. So, for instance, finding out that the companies that are responsible for building walls at the border in the U.S. and detaining people who are legally seeking asylum in our country and prisons in the U.S. are the same companies that are responsible for the security and building walls and the prisons that are jailing Palestinians, right? And so it's important that we are able to see how these corporations are not just landlocked, they're global.
Yeah.
And when we see each other in our struggle and our fight, we recognize that, oh, my struggle is actually your struggle. And the power is in our numbers. And so that's the beautiful thing that's happening. These solidarity movements that are increasing is really helping us see that we are one people. And there's a benefit to us coming together.
Indeed. International Women's Day, International Women's Month. Here we are. We celebrated the day last week, Friday. We're still in the month. But here's what I've noticed. I noticed that this is something that's sort of celebrated more in the global north, south, than the global north. Why do you think that is?
I think, again, it goes back to individualism. It goes back to not being able to see the connection in our struggles. I think the other issue with the global north is that there's so many people who are comfortable in their privilege.
Mm.
The global north has more people who are aligned with white supremacy, and there's privilege in that. Mm. We don't have the same struggles. The global north is also heavily run by white men. Their wives are white women.
Mm.
And so it is, they're comfortable in a way that we are not. I think also what's missing, what's the difference between, you know, feminist movements and in the global south and the global north, is again the lack of community. Being in Ghana for as long as I am in Ghana, you don't call before you go to your relative's house.
No.
You just show up.
You just show up.
There's no doorbells, you know. You don't plan ahead. You just show up. There's a community. Everybody in the neighborhood knows one another. Even if you don't know, you don't think you know somebody, they know you. They know your mother, your father, your cousin, your auntie, your uncle. In the U.S., it's so separate, where I noticed that people, you can live near your grandmother and not see her for weeks.
Mm.
That's wild to people like you and me, who are just so much more interconnected with our community.
Mm.
So there's a lack of community in the West. And I think part of that is because, again, these corporations, they are not invested in us having that community.
Mm-hmm.
They need us to be separate so we don't see how my neighbor's struggle is also my struggle.
That's so very, very true. That's that divide, and, you know, sort of build an invisible wall through behavior.
Yes.
And politics, and policies. It's, again, let's talk about that Western feminism and African feminism. Because I keep saying, so this year, the UN, their mantra this year for International Women's Day is invest in her. Okay, that's fine. But who is the her that they're talking about? Because my people in Nigeria are not the same her that they see over there, you know, in the West all the time, right? And I've often seen this conflict between the fact that African women have always had agency. Not that it's been perfect, but they've always had agency. They've always been able, you know, to sort of have businesses and control the homes and control villages and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. But you then have Western feminism, which kind of comes in and inserts itself, if you like, you know, and tries to reshape it. Would you agree with that?
100%. We see that happen in the U.S. for decades, where a lot of the movements are actually from the minds of Black women and Indigenous women. The things that are happening to us are also happening to, you know, to our neighbors. And so we have the idea. But there's also this element in the U.S. in the West of, how do I say this? We have this very celebrity culture where people who find themselves inserting themselves in the movement aren't really for the movement.
Mm.
Then it ends up becoming about the person leading the movement and not about the community that they're supposed to be serving. I've seen that over and over and over again. And so the other reason why these movements don't seem to be very impactful, I would say, in the West, is because when it's not impacting you, you don't understand the struggle. How could you speak to the struggle?
Yes.
Yes. When it's not really inclusive, when you're not really taking, not listening to Black women, not listening to Indigenous women, not listening to Latina women, your movement is going to fall apart. Because there's not a sense of community and a real sense of inclusivity in the movements. And they quickly disband and you move on to the next thing.
Mm.
And it's, you just see it over and over again. And when people insert themselves, please be a part of my struggle, but be a partner in this, as opposed to trying to co-opt it, change it for your own narrative, and then the entire plot gets lost. That actually happened to me very, very specifically. I don't want to go into that too much, but I had a partner who was a white woman, and we were working very, very well together for a few years. But once we started to gain more notoriety, more attention, more media, I noticed a shift where it became a bit less about the cause and more about, let's try to get more media and try to get more numbers and try to get, you know, more speaking engagements. And it just felt like it was becoming more of a way to get famous than as opposed to actually being a part of progressing equity.
Yeah.
And I left a very successful movement that we started because my partner, who didn't understand the struggle because she didn't have those lived experiences, could not speak to the community in a way that was really going to result in sustained change.
But can Western women be taught, can white women, okay, be taught about the struggle? Can they, you know, in order to become a partner, you need to understand what you're partnering with or what your partnership will add or contribute, and you know how it will make things better. Is that education possible, or is it just not? Is it always going to be conflicted all the time with, you know, the sense of white privilege and existence and black struggle for existence?
That is an excellent question. I want to be careful and mindful of how
There's no reason to be. I mean, be honest.
When it comes to feminist movements, I think black and brown women should always be leading. There are simply lived experiences that white women do not have, that they cannot speak to, that they cannot empathize with. They can sympathize, they can have compassion, they can understand it from an intellectual standpoint, but from a lived experience, they cannot understand. And that is why these movements, that's why there's so much disruption and division in Western feminism. Western feminism is it's a bit lazy. Because do you really understand what it takes? No, you do not. Like you said, who was the her? There's a beautiful commercial right now happening in the US, but it's a Ghanaian commercial with a Ghanaian girl. Every time it comes on TV, I'm so happy. But when it's over, I'm like, okay, what does that mean? You're talking about this, what does that mean? Is that going to translate into us recognizing the struggles that African immigrants have when they come to the US? Is this going to impact any sort of immigration policies? No, it's just a commercial. It's just virtue signaling. It's a wonderful commercial, but it doesn't translate into anything, because I'm sure the people who put the commercial together, all they're doing, that's their only job. Let's just put the commercial together and then we move on.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. Could that then, so that brings me back to Palestine and the struggles of Palestinian women, you know, brown people, black people. Could that then explain why so much of white Western women are disconnected from the pain of the Palestinian female? You know, the fact that women, Palestinian women, are the ones who are really, you know, affected the most. And then you go to Congo and you have exactly the same thing. And guess what? Their problem, their issues is kind of caused by the same Israel. Congo, Palestine, Israel, right there in the middle. Rwanda, Palestine, Congo. I mean, Israel, right there in the middle. South Africa, Palestine, Congo, Israel, right? And it's a recurring decimal after decimal after decimal.
Yes, and we're also in the U.S., we are taught to be desensitized and to the suffering of black and brown people in general. In the U.S., from a very young age, we are taught about the Holocaust. It is jammed down our throats. In fact, I did my senior graduating project on the Holocaust. I'm a Ghanaian woman, and I did my senior project on the Holocaust, not even knowing about the Holocaust happening in the Congo. I wasn't taught about King Leopold. I didn't know about the Dutch. I didn't know about any of these things. But I spent an entire year learning about what happened to the Jews, as I should have been taught. As we should have been. However, there's this normalization of Black suffering.
Mm.
There's this normalization and this idea that we cannot govern ourselves, and so this is why there's all this violence. We are not taught that it is the West that is intentionally destabilizing the Congo. We are not taught that it's the West and it was Israel that is deliberately part of destabilizing Rwanda. I found out that Israel was also involved in meddling in the Nigerian civil war.
Yeah.
We don't know any of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And so not only that, but there's also, unfortunately now, Israel has aligned itself with whiteness. I don't know if people understand and realize that 70% of Jews today are white. And with that comes privilege.
Absolutely.
And one of the privileges of whiteness is centering yourself in a struggle. And so they see what's happening to Israelis as just simply more important than what's happening to Palestinians, than what's happening to Congolese women and women in the Sudan, women in Nigeria, and where else, because that's who they identify with, because that's who looks like them.
Yeah.
It's whiteness, you know, it's which again goes back to why I think Black and brown women should be leading feminist movements. But in the U.S., it's very much, the U.S. is the ally to Israel. Mm. We are like their number one supporter, the U.S. and Israel, they're BFFs. And so it's very important to America that the citizens are also invested in that.
Mm.
So they're going to go out of their way to essentially brainwash us as best as they can.
Yeah.
To be supporters of Israel. And I think the tide is changing. I do think that I'm now seeing some, even Republicans in the U.S. kind of roll back and speak out about what's happening in Palestine, because they're recognizing that young people, they can see through this.
Mm.
They can see clearly that this is obviously something that is so terrible. We're finding out that Palestinian women are now dying from infection from using tent scraps as period products.
Mm.
Can you imagine getting your period and having to find a scrap?
Mm.
We cannot even fathom what that means. And so when you say, who does that her involve, why does that not involve Palestinian women, Palestinian girls, who have nothing to do with this conflict?
Indeed. Now, talking about the U.S., the big thing that happened yesterday is now they don't want to ban TikTok. Now they want TikTok to be sold.
Why?
They want TikTok to be sold to an American. Now, the word out there is that, you know, Zionist Americans and, you know, they're putting together, like, I think it's Steve Manchin, can't remember his name. They're putting together a group to try and buy TikTok. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, could it have anything to do with the fact that TikTok has actually exposed a lot about the history of Israel-Palestine since 7/10?
100%. I saw a graph recently about the most trending hashtags on TikTok, and the one that was exponentially higher than all the other hashtags was Free Palestine.
Mm. So now it's supposed to be sold.
Exactly. So now we must shut it down. We must silence them. I'm not a TikTok user. I don't go on there much, but I know people.
Neither am I.
I know people absolutely rely on it. One of my friends was like, I'm going to have to move out of US if they ban TikTok. So that's where I get all of my news, you know. And it's, but the young people, they know what's going on. They can see through it. They can see these politicians are, we want real answers. Mm. We want authenticity. We want something real. We want to be connected. And they can ban it if they want to, but it's not going to stop the movement. People know. They know what's going on. And they will find another way to figure out to get the news.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, going back to, you know, Holocaust, of course, you know, there's been so much compensation, and the world, Europe in particular, continues to pay the price of allowing the Holocaust to happen. They continue to. Their guilt continues to sort of eat them alive. Germany continues to pay the price. Europe was the first to actually start, you know, deporting Jews and actually subjugating Jewish people and discriminating against Jewish people. So we're allowed to talk about the Holocaust and, you know, compensation, etc., etc. for Holocaust survivors, for Israel, and rightfully so. But why then does it become political to talk about compensation for slavery?
Because they're still profiting off of the black body. So if they admit to this, if they have to give up reparations, that means that they're actually going to have to stop exploiting black labor. They're going to have to actually address what's going on in the Congo, which they're not going to do. The U.S. just threw out a case holding big tech companies responsible for violating child labor laws and slave labor in the Congo. They are forever invested in the exploitation of black labor. And I think that's one of the biggest reasons why they can't talk about reparations, because then you have to actually then address the inequities in the U.S. as well. I think it would take up to 230 years for black Americans, black descendants of enslaved Africans to catch up to the wealth of white people.
Wow.
230 years.
Wow.
If I right now go and apply for a job with next to a white woman and we have the exact same resume, I will get 20, 30 cents less than her, still to this day.
Wow.
And so it's just something that the corporations and the government they're just not ready and willing to address, because they're still profiting off of our bodies. They're in fact still profiting off of slave labor in prisons. The majority of bodies in prisons in the U.S. are black men, and corporations are using prison labor for cheap labor. So there are so many different areas and layers that they'll have to address if they actually give out reparations. It won't just be writing a check. It'll be looking at all the systems in which they are still profiting from the black body, and they're not ready to do that because it's too profitable.
Indeed. Now we have to bring it back home. African leaders. Yeah. Our leaders continue to be the weakest link over generation after generation after generation. Macky Sall just almost became another renegade, but luckily he stopped, of Senegal. What do you think? And we all ask ourselves this problem. What really is the damn problem with African leaders? What is it? Is it a curse?
Is it a curse? It almost feels like it.
It does.
It really does feel like it. I think it's greed. I also think it's fear. I remember wanting to get involved with activism more in Ghana, and I had uncles that begged me. They said, please, my daughter. They did not want me to get involved because they were too worried about my safety.
Wow.
I mean, Patrice Lumumba assassinated. Gaddafi assassinated. I am very worried about our brother in Burkina Faso, who he is for the people. He's trying to rid his country of the West. I fear for his life.
Yeah.
There's no doubt that someone is plotting right now to remove him so that the West can continue to exploit Burkina Faso. So I think it's greed. I think it's very easy for the U.S. to come in and say, we'll give you how many millions or billions of dollars for you to sell out your own people. Okay. I think that's one reason. But I also think there's this big, I think there's fear. There was also an Afro-Brazilian woman a few years ago who was assassinated for trying to advocate for black women's rights in Brazil. And so it's, but that's what it's going to take. It's going to take courage, bravery from African leaders to be able to stand up. But it's like, it was almost asking someone, are you okay to die? Are you okay to sacrifice yourself for this cause? How many people would really do that?
Yes, indeed.
No, because that threat is very real.
It is.
Very real.
Indeed. It very, very much is. Right. Lagos, Nigeria, you can call now because, you know, you people want, you know what you tried to do. I see the lines are going already. You smile. You don't know my listeners. They want to take over the shows from me. 0700-993-993-993. And the female only line, 0201-465-7190. Okay? 0809-597-5805 is the WhatsApp message you can send your message to. When I pick up your call, remember, this is Borderlines. I will pick up, you give your name, where you're calling from, and your question. Okay? No longer essays. We don't have much time. I'm coming to your calls now. Okay. Hello? Hello? Oops. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, good afternoon. Turn off your radio, please. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, good afternoon. I can hear you. I can Hello? Hear you. Yes, I can hear you.
My question.
Yes. What is your name, please, and where are you
My
calling
name is
from?
Pastor Badamosi from Surulere.
Okay, go ahead, Pastor.
My question is, black race.
Mm.
Does it think that we can pair with the white people?
Does she think that we can what?
We can really make a move. We can make.
Can we? Will we? Okay. Will we ever catch up with white race?
Right.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for your question, Michelle. I'll come to you in a second. Hello.
Chief Mr. Reti Bakare.
Chief Mister, good afternoon. What's
good afternoon.
Go ahead.
Michelle,
what's your
good
question?
Good afternoon.
I think
Hello,
she,
Michelle.
Good afternoon.
Thank you very much. For the African leaders,
mm-hmm.
is greed, my sister. Greed and wickedness. For Senegal, you just mentioned, thank God for the institution. Like the former Ghanaian president said, even if it's a devil that sits on that seat, with the institution, that devil have no room for some fun again. Mitchell, you are my sister-in-law. My wife, Rachel, is a Ghanaian. Rachel Asante. I'm so happy when I hear your voice.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. So my previous the previous caller, the question was, do you think the black race can ever catch up with the white race? I'm going to keep quiet and let you deal with that one.
I think anything is possible.
Mm-hmm.
I think that what we've seen in history is all nations fall. Nothing stays the same.
Mm.
Everything is always moving. Everything is always shifting. Do I think it's going to happen in our lifetime? I mean, no, already, like I said, 230 years is what it will take at least for black Americans to catch up to what the white people. But what it will take is really solidarity amongst the Pan-African movement. Amongst the Africans in the diaspora, black Americans and Africans, we still have a long way to go as far as healing our relationship.
Mm.
And it's going to take healing our relationship if we want to catch up to wealth and equality and power with the global north, with European countries, because that is, I think that's one of the biggest reasons why our progress is slow. Mm-hmm. There is still a huge divide between Africans and those in the diaspora, specifically African Americans. It's getting better. You see African Americans moving to Africa. That's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful movement. But what we need to do is actually be having deep conversations about what is that divide. How have we been deliberately pinned against each other? I hear Africans say things about black Americans that they don't understand. I hear African Americans say things about Africans they don't understand, and it's all just so negative. We still have issues with colorism in our communities that needs to be dealt with, because those who are lighter skinned, again, it's that proximity to whiteness, mm-hmm. that I don't even know if they understand this, what they were trying to achieve. They just say, oh, I just like the color. No. You don't even realize that what it is white supremacy being, you know, seeped into your mind.
Absolutely.
And so, yes. And so we have a lot of work to do on ourselves first to undo the internalized white supremacy, the internalized anti-blackness, healing our communities before we will ever catch up. White people are connected to one another.
Mm.
When immigrants come from Ukraine or from Ireland or from wherever, they have no problem with them.
Mm.
But an immigrant comes from Mexico or Nigeria or Ghana or India, they have a problem. It doesn't matter that they're from a different country. The white people see each other as one. And so we need to start doing that with ourselves first. So we have a long ways to go, heal ourselves, address some of these issues. If I was the president of Ghana, I would ban skin bleaching. That would be
absolutely
number one. Number one, out the door, you know, gone,
yeah,
gone forever.
Gone.
gone, you know, our education system. I found out a cousin of mine in Ghana was taught from her high school teacher something insane. Like, before the white man came, we didn't know much. And I, my whole body got hot. I could feel my face, my chest. I wanted to go to her school and find her teacher.
Wow.
You know, we are not being taught about our African leaders, the people who were trailblazers in Africa that can help kind of
inspire,
empower us.
Yes.
Inspire
yes,
us.
Yes.
Motivate us. So we have a long ways to go in to heal ourselves first, before we even think about trying to necessarily compete with or catch up to white people. We have work to do.
We have a lot of work to do. I mean, it's funny you should say that. Even in Nigeria, the Nigeria history was banned for a long time, was taken out of the curriculum.
Wow.
It's
Can
now,
you imagine?
It's been returned, but the problem is there are no teachers because all the decades it was removed, nobody was training to teach history. So now there's a huge gulf in the education system, even at the university level, where, okay, it's back, even at the sort of primary level, but who's going to teach it? Who is going to teach it? And then there's the story of slavery in itself and the part that Nigeria played, especially West Africa, especially Nigeria, played in the selling of our brethren to, you know, to whiteness. And this is the thing. I'm going to ask you a very controversial question now, because they're calling again and they don't want me to talk to you. Do you think, and this is the place of truth that you mentioned that we need to start healing from, do you think Africans, especially Nigeria, especially West Africa, needs to now apologize to African Americans for what we did in slavery?
Yes.
Thank you.
I think we need to put our pride and ego aside and apologize, because I hear that a lot in U.S. That is a place of pain for Black Americans. Growing up, I didn't have a lot of Black American friends, and I didn't understand. Mm. You know, I didn't know that we did this. But they say that a lot. Well, you sold us. I did not. I'm so, you know, I find myself apologizing. You know? But I think if we could start there, I absolutely agree with you. I think just the apologies are powerful.
Mm.
Apologies are incredibly powerful. Just the words "I'm sorry" and atoning for that, even if it wasn't you, is an incredibly powerful shift in a relationship, to say, at least I can trust you that you see that something was wrong, here.
Mm.
I was wronged in a way. You acknowledge I was wronged in a way. And I think that would go, I think that would be beautiful, incredible. And I think that would really dispel a lot of the, what's the word I'm looking for? Resentment.
Yes, yes,
that
indeed.
Towards Africans.
I mean, Nigeria is uniquely placed as, you know, many Black diaspora, it doesn't matter where they come from. What they would say, when Nigeria fails, we all hurt. If Nigeria falls apart, the whole Black diaspora falls apart. What do you think that Nigeria needs to do better? Because should that apology be coming from Nigeria as the most populous African country in the world? Or does it have to come from, you know, all of, you know, the African leaders, ECOWAS, the AU? I mean, I know they're pretty much comatose, the AU, that is, especially. But, you know, is it them that we need to get together to say, look, on the next Africa Day, which is coming up, we want to acknowledge this, and we know this happened.
Absolutely, because it wasn't just Nigerians.
Mm.
I found out I'm Ashanti. I found out the Ashantis did it as well, and so there are many tribes and groups in Africa who are responsible for this. And again, it would show a solidarity. It would show an understanding of the need for us to come together.
Mm.
We can't just put it on Nigerians. It wasn't just Nigerians, and so everyone that was involved in that, I think, should issue an apology and one apology would be wonderful if we all came together and they all said, we all did this and we all want our brethren to come back and we are going to work together. I'm finding out, I didn't realize this. I didn't realize how problematic ECOWAS was until recently. Mm. And so, you know, and so even that, I think, is it'll show a solidarity happening amongst Africans that is very important for the diasporans to see, because they know that even Africans are divided.
Yeah.
They know, you know, to a degree, and it's not enticing. What they want is community and solidarity. Mm. So it's not enticing for them to come to somewhere if they know that there's division there as well. They want to come into something that's warm and welcoming. And maybe I don't want to go to live in Nigeria or Ghana. I'll go to Senegal. I'll go to Sierra Leone. I'll go to Burkina Faso. Give them options. And I don't think it's fair to just put it on Nigerians.
Indeed. I have a comment, a question on WhatsApp. Please read it out for me.
All right. Joe from Ikorodu says, I commend the wisdom of your guest. Now I'm beginning to understand why, instead of African leaders to come together to fight for the emancipation of Africa, they joined in the exploitation of their own people because they prefer to stay alive, impoverishing the people, than being killed by the white. Is cowardice what exactly are you doing to educate people through social media skits making? Because that is the best language the young people can actually relate with.
It's interesting. Yeah, he said, what are we doing with, because, you know, there's a lot of African skit makers now. Skit making and it's like, how are you using that to educate? How are you using that to empower? How are you using that to upgrade blackness? Mm. You know, and progress blackness. And I think that's what that comment is trying to say. The lines are still going. I'm coming to your calls now. Calm down. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, good afternoon.
Bakare Yusuf, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Thank you. You're happy to know, I'm fine.
Okay.
Number one, you have raised a lot of topics. I would have loved to talk, contribute on the issue of the TikTok, but maybe another time you talk about American politics. Therefore, today, I first of all want to disagree with our guest and you talking about the reparation on the slavery. I totally disagree.
Okay.
And the reason I'm going to disagree is part of what she has mentioned. The people who collaborated with the white colonial masters, the white slave traders, they were black people.
Mm-hmm.
And this just about 7, 3, 4, 5 white men will come with their sheep and just, you know, bamboozle our people, deceive them, and they took all of our men away. And that was by the side. Number two, you see, go to Mau Mau in Kenya. They pay some of them money. What did they do with the money? Even in Namibia, their Germany agreed to pay how much money now. For how many years are they going to be paying back the money? So I think the problem of Africa is still persisting. For instance, the slavery has not stopped. IMF is a slavery mechanism. The same thing with the World Bank. Well, how can you have leaders who are slave traders? For instance, look at what our president did last year. They deceived him to remove subsidy and what have you. You have slaves all over Nigeria today. People have become beggars.
So are you saying, yes, I can hear you. So are you saying then they shouldn't be compensating for slavery?
No, or should compensate anybody. The best compensation Africans can have is for African children to be educated and rise up and change away all these bad leaders. Go to Ghana, where our guest is from.
Mm-hmm.
Look at what has happened to CDs today. They've gone to borrow money, the same thing with Cote d'Ivoire. Is that the way to go? Is that what Pan-Africanist Kwame Nkrumah and co. did to get Africa emancipated? So nobody should pay anybody any reparation except between just these bad leaders that we have, slave traders all over, from Nigeria and beyond. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm going to come. Oops, let me cut that off. Do you want to comment on that, Michelle?
I can understand his viewpoints.
Mm.
About money being mismanaged. I understand that. I think the reparations should go mostly to the people who were impacted by the slavery. I absolutely agree, or I absolutely believe that Black Americans should be compensated for slavery.
Mm-hmm.
Not only to Black Americans, but the Black people in South America, in Brazil, all over South America, anywhere that your ancestors were enslaved and taken from Africa to the Americas,
Caribbean, etc. Yeah.
Yes, because till this day, they're still not being paid equally as whites.
Mm.
And if you understood the history in America, every time that reparations was on the table, whether it was reparations in actual cash or reparations in terms of lands that they were supposed to get, Black Americans were actually supposed to have all received land to be able to build and farm and whatnot, and it was taken from them. The government went back on their word, and what he may not understand is that other people were given that land that was supposed to have gone to descendants of enslaved Africans. The land was given to other people. It was given to Asians. It was given to the Irish. It was given to other people, except Black people specifically. Specifically. And so it's important that the U.S. atone for that. Where is the land that you were supposed to have given the Black Americans? Why was it given to everyone else except them and the indigenous Americans? It also wasn't given to them because, I mean, they were essentially wiped off of the land entirely. They're now put on reservations. We barely even see the original Americans in our society today because they were so far removed. So while I may agree to an extent about that reparations in Africa, although I do think that Africans should also get reparations, but of the mismanagement of money, can you trust that if the money is given to the government that they are going to actually disperse it correctly? Probably not. I agree with that. But knowing just how much Black people are still deliberately not paid equally, I think that there should be reparations. I do.
Okay, so let's come back to Palestine. We've only got 10 minutes left because I know that's a topic that's important to you.
Yes.
70% of Gaza is literally gone. Flat. We're talking about reparations and they haven't even begun to even get to the point of ceasefire. Hamas made a deal for ceasefire earlier this morning or yesterday. Yep. Israel has said no. What do you see? What are your thoughts? Because what I want to say is it's not even a gulf anymore. It's almost like a sort of obnoxiousness, a pernicious, dangerous obnoxiousness that has now become a pattern where this ceasefire is concerned. What are your thoughts on that?
I think, unfortunately, the West is going to accomplish a lot of whatever their original goal was. I know that they are trying to get access to, I think it's $500 or $600 billion worth of oil that is under Gaza. And it's just one of the most terrible things most of us have ever seen in our entire lives. And it's all for, again, this goes back to greed. Greed and white supremacy is continuing to allow this to happen. I think that's why the ICJ really can't do anything. The UN doesn't really do anything. These institutions are still run mostly by white people. And I think it sets a very, very scary precedent for the world that this can continue to allow it, and we are aware of it, and we can't do anything about it. I think it's very, very scary. And yes, people say this has been going on since the beginning of time. Humans have fought one another. There's always been war. There's always been death. Sure, but we haven't always had the technology to be able to see it and do something about it. Yeah, I think, unfortunately, the West is going to be able to get access to that. I think right now they're building some sort of pier.
Yeah.
To be able to get aid. Why not just let the aid into Gaza?
And this is the question. And this is, in fact, a good segue to my next question. 13 UNRWA staff were accused. I say accused with a real thick underline, accused by Israel, has been, quote unquote, involved with 710, involved with Hamas. Yet UNRWA has 30,000 staff. 13. Yep. Up until now, Israel has not actually provided any evidence. The UN have suspended those 13 people. I think two of them might even have passed on. But the UN has suspended those 13 people without they suspended them immediately without investigation. And here we are, UNRWA, who has the infrastructure and the layout to be able to actually be the humanitarian. They are the humanitarian force on the ground. we're in fasting, we're in Ramadan, and prior to that, Israel had turned starvation into their next weapon. I mean, what would you say to the international community that withdrew their funding from UNRWA, knowing full well that there is no other organization that literally could carry out the important, the urgent humanitarian needs on the ground? Even though Biden was playing, is telling on his state of the on his SOTU, the State of the Union speech, was saying to Netanyahu, you know, humanitarian can't be your, it can't be treated like a second option. You know, it has to be prioritized. What are your thoughts on that?
The countries that immediately pulled out, they're fools.
Mm.
They're fools. What we have seen happening over and over again for years is that Israel will manipulate the public by making up an outrageous lie, drudging up all of this angst and anger and frustration amongst the public for the, to get public support without ever providing one lick of evidence. This is not just from October 7th. This has been happening for years. And then over time, eventually you find out that the claims that they made weren't even true.
Mm.
And so if people have been paying attention, these other countries, if they know that this is a strategy of Israel to make up these crazy, insane lies, only to, you know, to backtrack later on, then give us some time and wait for the evidence. In what other situation, in any court of system, do you punish a person without the evidence? Where in a court of law do you say you're going to, we're going to prosecute you without actually having any evidence to show that you did the thing that is being, there's a jury of your peers, there's a trial, all of these things. And so these countries, not only are they fools for believing this and impatient, but the majority of countries that did this are majority white countries. Again, that allegiance with white supremacy is incredibly powerful.
Mm.
They're, in my opinion, they're white supremacist countries who don't see Palestinians as full human beings. And I think any country that pulled out from giving aid to UNRWA should be prosecuted for war crimes, because they are aiding in the deliberate starvation of an entire population. That is a war crime that they should be held responsible for. You're starving people. That's a crime.
Indeed. We have 5 minutes left. So I'm going to give you two guests that you're going to talk to now. I'm going to ask you, if Biden was in front of you right now, because, you know, your second home is America, okay, and you do have the right to vote there, what would you say to him?
I would ask him questions. I think I would ask him, what is your... what is the real reason that you are so loyal to Israel? Tell us the real reason. Give me an honest, straight answer. You know, unfortunately, one of the reasons that people like Trump so much is because Trump is very straightforward in his answers. You know what that man is thinking all the time, even when it's the most ridiculous, terrible thought. You know what he's thinking. With Biden, he is such a politician that it's very hard to understand, what is this man actually thinking? What is his agenda? And that's why he's losing so much support. What is going on, Biden? Why is it? Do you want to go down in history as one of the worst presidents that aided and embedded a genocide?
Mm.
Is this what you want to be known for? Do you really believe that what you are doing is noble, is moral, is just, is the right thing to do? We already know that he doesn't actually believe that. That's just an insane thing to think that starving innocent people is the right thing to do. I think about this sometimes. I don't think I would shake his hand. I have very little respect for him. Living in America and having met so many people in high positions, you learn to not put people on a pedestal.
Mm.
You learn that I don't care how much money you have, how much notoriety you have, how many followers you have, you can still be a terrible person at the end of the day. And so I think it's important to hold, to knock them down a few pegs as regular people, as they are, who just happen to be in this position because of their ability to be manipulative or their ability to network in the right circles to get to where they are. And I would not treat him in any other way. I'd treat him like a person who is literally causing a genocide.
Is that why they call him? So you're saying he deserves to be called Genocide Joe, does he?
I 1,000% believe he deserves to be called Genocide Joe. 100%.
Okay. Now, the second person that I'm going to put in front of you is Benjamin Netanyahu. What would you say to him in 2 minutes?
Oh, my goodness. I'd probably just say, You are
language.
You are like Satan incarnate. You are the embodiment of evilness. You are embodying dark. The darkness that you talk about. I think at one point you said we are the children of light fighting against the children of darkness. Netanyahu to me embodies darkness. When I look at videos of him, I see nothing behind his eyes but dark. I see nothing behind his eyes but evilness. And all that I can hope for and pray for is that when he crosses over, he will find out just how evil he actually was when he has to live out his soul in the rest of eternity being held responsible for what he did.
Indeed, Michelle. What an amazing interview we've had. We could go on and on. They're telling me in my ears that we've got to go. Michelle Ajao saying, look, the news lady has come in already. Thank you so, 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 so much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful weekend. We will have you back because inevitably these things will change after Ramadan. There will be a time to talk about peace even more, because some people don't want to talk about peace now because they're like, look, people are dying and you want to talk about peace. Stop. Let's stop the death. Let's stop the killings. Let's stop the loss of life. Let's stop the blood before we start talking about peace. So inevitably you will be back.
Wonderful. I can't wait.
Thank you, Michelle. Have a wonderful weekend.
Too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Lagos, Nigeria, wherever you're listening to, that is the end of another fantastic edition of Borderlines, the only show that takes you beyond borders. We went to Ghana, we went to Israel, we crossed over to Congo. Now I've got my girl Yvonne in front of me, ready to give you all the news. Take care, have a wonderful weekend. Be well, bye-bye.